You are listening to Impact My City, a podcast for the rising entrepreneur pursuing their endeavors to be the person they want to become. I'm your host, Danny Aguirre. In this podcast, you'll hear stories from entrepreneurs, influencers, and rising artists. You'll be able to learn from their experiences and cater it to your lifestyle. So let's get started. Dave Hollis, you guys, the CEO of the Hollis Company, a company seeking to ensure that all individuals achieve their potential, was once the president of theatrical distribution at Walt Disney Studios. He moved up the ranks at Disney for 17 years. He's married to the motivational speaker and best-selling author, Rachel Hollis, and together they both run a great business and they're owners of the Rise Together podcast. He was instrumental in the distribution of the new Star Wars films and as well as the Avengers series. Dave, can you please just give us some background on yourself? I think I only bared surface on just a bit of who you are. I would like to just bare surface as much as I can on who you are.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate you having me on today. Thank you for having a show where you're trying to help people reach yourself for a better version of themselves. So I have, like you said, been working with my wife for a little more than a year now at a company called the Hollis Company, where we create tools that if people were to use them might afford them a chance to make their life better. And we do that with books, with podcasts, with live events, and with merchandise. And man, we've been having a lot of fun. Before that, I worked in the entertainment business for a little more than 20 years, the last 17 of which, as you mentioned, was at the Walt Disney Company, where I had a variety of different roles at the studio during my time there. The last 7 years that I was there, I finished as the head of sales, the head of distribution for the movie studio. So I was putting the movies from Marvel, Pixar, Disney, Disney Live Action, and Lucasfilm into movie theaters. And it was a fantastic job. It was a fantastic job until it wasn't as big a challenge as I was hoping for in my life, until the alternative of working with my wife didn't seem as appealing as she'd spent as long as she did building a company that was able to pull me away. Before that, I started my career at 20th Century Fox, worked in research and then publicity. I went to a talent agency where I managed talent, movie humans, TV humans, and then I did some grassroots marketing for Merv Griffin. So I've had some fun experiences. I grew up not far away from where you did, down in Southern California. I grew up in San Clemente. My wife and I have 4 kids, which is like 1,000 children, and we now live in Austin, Texas, where we try to do all the things.
That is awesome. So on top of all that, how did you start in the Disney industry? That's something I want to know personally, and I think a lot of people would like to know. Disney is always a kid's dream growing up, and to start in the Disney industry, how did that feel? Like, where did it all start?
Yeah, so I've been working primarily in television before I started at Disney, and the entertainment world is a little bit of a smaller space, so after having had what was about 7 or 8 years of having worked in 4 different bigger entertainment companies, I actually got a call from a recruiter letting me know that there was a position that was available inside of the Walt Disney Company. I came to the interview, and I'll be honest, I was naive. I did not realize at the time that Disney owned a company called Miramax, which was producing more of kind of like the awards caliber, smaller but higher production quality films. And so I came into the interview, and there was a picture of Pulp Fiction on the wall. And I thought, what Disney office is this? What is happening here? And it turned out I was interviewing for a position as a product manager for the brand of Miramax and ultimately Dimension Films. And jumped at the chance to get my foot in the door, because I, like you and basically all of humanity, thought, man, it'd sure be neat to have an opportunity to work at the Walt Disney Company. I started in packaged media, DVDs, and spent a little bit of time in brand management, a little bit of time in sales. I moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and sold DVDs to Best Buy and a handful of other companies that were based out of Minneapolis. Came back and worked in product management again, in some business development roles, and then ultimately in the sales side. But it's a special place. I mean, honestly, the greatest media company on earth, best brands, and from my experience, the very, very best people.
Wow. And you really moved up the ranks in the years as well, right?
I did. I was fortunate to, for the first 10 years that I was in the company, have 10 jobs in those 10 years. So every year, almost a year into each job, I was asked if I would consider taking on a new assignment, which from a professional ADD perspective, man, I never ever was bored for long in any of the roles that I had, and was always being thrown into something new that I sometimes had some experience with, but most of the time had no idea what the heck I was doing. And it required me to learn to swim quickly and, ask a lot of questions and depend on people who were on the team that I was then managing to show me and teach me a little bit more about the business that I was taking on. So it was an incredible learning experience. And each of those experiences added a little bit of a new set of skills that I could bring to the next job that made me a little bit more marketable for whatever that next thing might be. And so each opportunity tended to then open the door for the next opportunity. And after those 10 jobs in 10 years, I was given this chance to run international theatrical distribution, put movies into theaters overseas. And though I had no experience selling movies in theaters and no experience really in selling things internationally, because I'd shown an ability to work in a bunch of different businesses, the organization thought I could figure it out. So they threw me in. I had to learn how to swim, had the expertise again of people in 52 countries around the world who'd been doing it a long time, teach me all the things I needed to know. And then as a result of serendipity or providence, I was in the right place at the right time, had worked hard. And my predecessor, who'd worked as the head of global distribution and ran the US forever and ever, decided to retire after I'd been in that international job for about a year. And so I took on and then ran the global business, including the US, for those last 7 years of my time at Disney. And it was drinking out of a fire hydrant kind of learning for sure, in a super, super exciting way. And it was truly an experience of a lifetime.
That's amazing. So that's crazy, because you started off learning all these challenges and you fell in love with it, right? So as you move up the ranks and you hit the presidency of theatrical distribution, what was that like when you got to the top? You know, how did that feel?
Well, at first it felt, one, there's great satisfaction, obviously, in being able to like have a goal, chase a goal, put hard work into it, and ultimately achieve a title that meant a lot to me in the industry, a responsibility that meant the extended team around the world was more than 1,000 people. Like like to be able to try and support a team in what ended up becoming record-breaking years in consecutive years was, it feels amazing. Mm. And at the beginning, it felt exhilarating because of usually walking into the room every time being the person who knew the least about the business. And so there was something in that learning curve that was forcing me to grow, because the friction of me having to catch up quickly was a great accelerant for me learning and becoming a better employee and a better leader and a better contributor to the mission of the organization. After the learning curve had been conquered, that changed. Yeah. And in a weird way, when I came on as the head of sales, the company had just finished the acquisition of Pixar. And about 3 years in, they finished the acquisition of Marvel Studios. And about 2 years later, finished the acquisition of Lucasfilm. So the greatest animation studio in the history of time, then the greatest superhero company in the history of time, and then the greatest sci-fi franchise in the history of time, right? Those are things that, one, it was amazing, obviously, to be able to work on Inside Out or Toy Story 3. It was amazing to be able to work on The Avengers or Black Panther. It was amazing to work on The Force Awakens. But in a world where I'd had all of this experience of being challenged by things I did not yet know how to do, and the kind of growth and the fulfillment that came in the uncertainty of knowing for sure that I could pull it off. When you have as much leverage in a sales conversation as we ended up having, going to exhibition and selling Star Wars and Avengers is not a very difficult thing to do, because movie theaters really need those movies and they really want those movies. And so when that learning curve was gone and the challenge of selling the movies to theaters just wasn't as hard as it once was, it wasn't as fulfilling a job, even though from the outside it looked like the greatest job on earth. It came with the title and, you know, every other thing that, you know, a job like that might come with. So it provoked a bunch of really interesting questions about what I wanted to do with my life and whether this was the place that I was truly best able to use the potential that I have. And it happened to coincide with my wife having spent 15 years of time building her business. And as it was a bit about to tip into some new space, we had a bigger conversation about what partnering with each other might look like, how I might be able to take my operational and sales experience and partner it with her creative and her visionary side of things.
That's beautiful. So we're going to get into that in just a little bit, because I definitely want to know more about the Hollis Co. and just with you and your wife, everything you've done. But there's a statistic that I recently just read, and it got me really thinking. We are happiest when we are learning. Do you think that that is 100% true? Because it seems like through the years that you were just on fire until it got to the top and you weren't really learning anymore. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, for sure. There is an unbelievable tie between growth and fulfillment. If you are not growing, you cannot be fulfilled. And I had been the beneficiary of new assignments and challenges with work environments that had me growing for so long that I took for granted that fulfillment would always exist. And when I found myself in a role that I thought I always wanted, and the challenges of work were things that were no longer in my way, the fulfillment that I previously had in my career was a casualty to having become really comfortable with my job. And so if you find yourself in a place where you're struggling with fulfillment, or you feel stuck, or you feel like you're in a rut, I'm going to argue that you're probably not in a position where you are personally growing, where you're being pushed. Now, I grew up for most of my life with certainty as the commodity in life that I treasured most. It came out of my family of origin. I just always wanted to be able to know as much as I could about what was going to happen, manage my own and others' expectations, feel a sense of knowing exactly what was going to happen next, which is ridiculous. You can't predict what's going to happen next. But my attempts to cling to certainty were a thing that kept me tethered to a comfort zone. And in your comfort zone, you cannot grow. And so as much as I was trying, I thought, my entire life to organize around this idea of the preservation of comfort and the preservation of certainty, it was coming at the expense of learning. It was coming at the expense of growth. And at the, you know, in a world where growth didn't exist or learning didn't exist, fulfillment couldn't exist either. So I 100% agree with the statement. And now I trust me, I'm in real time living in an environment where I do not know how to do a ton of the things that we are trying to do on a regular basis, which means I am having to learn every day how to do the job that I currently have, which is why I'm so stinking fulfilled with what we're up to. Separate from the impact that I think the work we're doing is having, personally, being in a position where you're learning and are forced out of your comfort zone into something that challenges you to grow, that's how ultimately you can feel a sense of fulfillment and happiness.
Absolutely. So something that I really took out there is you talking about comfort zones. That's something I not necessarily preach, but mention all the time on the podcast is comfort zones. Because at a young age, I left my house from beautiful San Diego at the age of 19 to join the Air Force and pretty much get the crap beaten out of me at boot camp and daily. And although it has been an experience, I've learned so much, and I am here in North Dakota talking to people such as you and other entrepreneurs learning a lot while in a dorm room. So
I love that. I mean, here's the thing. I got a tattoo. I have two tattoos. The one I got most recently is representative of what this last couple years has meant for me. It says, "A ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were built for," right? John Shedd quote. Mm-hmm. Like forever and ever, I tried to stay docked to that, to that harbor and keep myself from having to experience the waves that would otherwise disrupt my life. And the, reality is I'm built for the waves, and I had to put it on my arm as a reminder to myself and my kids that only when you go out and fully attempt to utilize the potential that has been put in you by your creator, will you actually get to become what it is that you were put on this earth to become. It doesn't mean that the waves aren't choppy. Doesn't mean that you're not going to feel uncomfortable outside of your comfort zone. By definition, you will, but that's what I'm built for. It's what you're built for. And when you can embrace it, it will fundamentally change the way that you get to fully experience life.
Mm-hmm. And I want everybody to understand what Dave's saying here, that you have a purpose. And I think it's amazing that you said that, because in a sense, how you use boats is the exact same on working on aircraft in the Air Force. When an aircraft is sitting on the flight line, sitting down, it is corroding. It's building dirt, dust, and then it is my job to go out there and fix the structural integrity to that plane. But when it's in the skies doing its mission, doing its job, it is least subjected to corrosion. It is least subjected to damage. Does it damage? Yes, because there are bumpy roads. I guess you can say turbulence in that case. But when it's on the ground, it's corroding. It is just building all this bacteria, dust, all that stuff. So I absolutely love that, because I understand.
So good.
Exact same. Yeah, it's exact same. Even my buddies in the Navy told me that too, that work on the boats. You, like you said, you start to corrode fungus, bacteria. So I totally love that you said that. I think that's awesome. But kind of moving into from Disney to the Hollis Company, just the juice of all of that. So you definitely, something that I love about you is that you went from that comfort zone, stability, pretty much what society wants, into, okay, well, I'm going to risk it all, and I'm going to move from beautiful California to Austin, Texas. What type of emotions were going through that? I mean, I'm sure you were excited at that point when you were making that shift, but was there any fear? Was there any?
Of course there was fear. Oh my goodness. I mean, the reality is there were so many forces, most of them like constructed in my head, that were keeping me from making this decision earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Like the weight of what other people might think of this decision for me to do something that made sense to me, but did not make sense to them, kept me from taking a leap that ultimately has been, I mean, this last year has been the best, in some ways the hardest, but in most ways the most rewarding and fulfilling year of my entire life. And the idea that I wouldn't have done it earlier because of what other people might have thought of my decision has shown to be just a complete ridiculous thing that was in my head. The like idea of uncertainty versus certainty, like there was certainty in staying where I was before. And I had all this muscle memory around chasing a thing that I knew I could count on. And that idea for so long was a driving, motivating factor until it flipped and became an Achilles heel. Mm. And so the deciding to step away from certainty for something that was not as, it was not as certain. We made the decision to come and do this before my wife's first big book, Girl Wash Your Face, came out. Now, good news, it came out. It was the second biggest selling book of 2018. Mm-hmm. And so it like really gave us a lot more certainty, certainly in how we were approaching scaling the business. But it wasn't a known thing. And so there was, for me, like there would be for anyone, anxiety in how my role as a provider for my family would manifest in an environment where there wasn't a guaranteed paycheck coming from the Walt Disney Company every 2 weeks. What's interesting is when we first got here, we made a lot of decisions that actually were coming out of more of a scarcity mindset. We said yes to a lot of things opportunity-wise that we would not say yes to now because of not knowing for certain that things were going to end up happening the way that they did. And so it's been a little bit of a learning exercise in the kind of confidence and faith that you might need, the kind of patience that might pay off, even when you don't yet have absolute signs of what you hope to build coming to fruition, staying connected to really only saying yes to the things that you have a lot of personal passion for and that align with your values or your impact goals or whatever it might be. But we decided to do something in moving our family, our four kids, from the school that they knew and the friends that they had, the family that each of us have in California, to Texas, because we knew that we wanted to try and live a completely different kind of life than the one that we had in Los Angeles that was as connected as it had been to my job in the entertainment business. And to be able to go do something that's a little bit crazy, like pursuing your dreams, we had to find a way to do it cost of living wise in a place that wasn't as stinking expensive as LA was. And so, right, we found a spot 45 minutes southwest of Austin, Texas, and we live in the sticks, but we live in the sticks in a way that like is a peaceful, awesome retreat from the chaotic, crazy world that we are now living in, and came at a cost that really limited some of the risk in the riskiness of taking the boat out of the harbor.
Yeah. That's beautiful though, because so many people back home ever since I joined the military are like, what? Texas? What? Florida? And it's like another world over there. It's like they're so subjected to California, which I totally understand because I love San Diego. I miss, there's nothing like San Diego, in my opinion, from all the states that I've been to since I've joined the military. But I love that you were able to take everything you had, your family, you said your kids, friends, school, all that, and moved it over. And it was just such a shift. I think that that speaks a lot of volume to you guys. But I personally want to know, how did that affect your guys' relationship? Because you guys are growing together constantly. You guys are learning more. You guys are working together for the first time ever, as far as business partners.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Well,
you know, I mean, there's kind of two parts to the answer. The first part is I made the move to pursue the opportunity, but a primary motivation was pursuing the opportunity. Secondary motivation was pushing myself into a place where I could reclaim a state of fulfillment by doing something where I was challenged and where I was doing something that required more of my potential. Mm-hmm. I was in a posture of being stuck and unfulfilled in my old job, in that old life, that since I've come here has brought me back to who I was before I was stuck. Mm-hmm. And so from that lens, through that lens, our relationship is unbelievably better because I'm a guy she wants to hang out with and make out with and like be in partnership with because I'm the person that she knew for a whole bunch of years before I deviated from who I was and got in a funk. Going from 30 to 40 was a bridge that became a bit of a funk, and that funk being resolved by the decision to do something that disrupted the funk has been an awesome, awesome piece of fruit. Working together has been the best thing and the hardest thing that we have ever taken on, period. We are with each other almost every hour. I mean, she's speaking, as it turns out, today in Indianapolis, so she's not with me today. But for the most part, we are with each other a ton. And there's an interesting ego dynamic that exists in her having spent 15 years building this company to what it was to make it attractive enough for me to want to make the jump and come lead it. But because she's the founder, put 15 years of sweat equity and blood into making this thing what it is, I have to walk into it with a sense of reverence. I can't disregard in any way any of the things that she's done. And so there are times when I think we should go right and she thinks we should go left. And I have to really think about whether this is a battle or a war. Do I want to like fight this, or do I want to let this one go for the preservation of our working relationship? She has, and I have, we both have strengths. And I think what we're realizing more than anything is at the beginning of this working relationship, our different leadership styles, that I am more operational, practical, pragmatic, that she's more a dreamer, the visionary, she's more the creative. The way that those different profiles would lead one or the other of us to try and drive the business at first was a point of friction. Now we see the combination of those two perspectives as the unfair advantage that is helping drive our business in a way that other businesses won't be driven. And so It took time. We're 13 months into working together every single day. And we've figured out most of the things that create bumps. One of the things that we've had to like really, really commit to, which was uncharacteristic of us before this working relationship, is a thing we call radical candor. We have to push into and have very direct, hard conversations when something comes up in our working relationship in real time. Because we have too many great things to do. We got here and had 4 employees. We now have 44 employees.
Oh my goodness.
We have too many people who are depending on us to get our emotions and our egos in check. And so we have really hard conversations all the time. At the beginning of having hard conversations all the time, it's harder because it's uncomfortable. Now that we have them all the time, it is less hard. We just have to, like, if you don't have them, it gives the possibility of something small becoming something big. And if you don't deal with it, something that could have been nipped turning into something that festers. And we don't have any appetite for either of that. We don't have time for that. We got too much good work to do to like dwell on that. So it's been, sorry, long way to answer the question you asked 40 minutes ago. It's been the very, very best thing that's ever happened to our relationship working together, and the hardest thing, but it's made our relationship better because of the fact that it's hard.
Wow. That is beautiful. And I appreciate you putting all that into perspective. For the reason being, I personally look up to you. I look up to you in your relationship. For the reason being, I'm actually getting married next month in like 3 weeks, actually.
Wow. Congrats.
Thank you. And so me and my fiance will be actually getting into the business together. And I think for the both of us, from going from high school together to now, it's going to be definitely a change. For one, she's going to be moving from San Diego to North Dakota and have to feel this negative 60 degree weather during January. So that will be fun for her. But on top of that, I just think what you guys do is beautiful. I think the relationship you guys have is beautiful. And I think you guys learn a lot through it. And I'm sure you guys are learning something new about each other every day, still to this day, which most relationships do not get. Especially at the age of 30, 40, or anywhere beyond, a lot of people just kind of get comfortable, like we were talking about earlier, and then it really affects the relationship. And I think it's beautiful what you guys have. Not saying that you guys don't have ups and downs, because I'm sure you guys still do, but I think that's something a lot of people should be able to take from, is that you guys are impacting the world, impacting society, impacting your guys' followers. And that's why I wanted you guys on the show, or at least you on the show, just so people can have a view of what it's like, of real time, of what I guess your purpose could really achieve. And I love your guys' story. I love Rachel's story. I love your story as well. So number one, I just want to say thank you for that.
I think
that is beautiful. I think that is awesome. So we are getting close to out of time. So I want to ask you some questions, just some quick questions, and I want you to just answer them to the best of your ability. It doesn't matter if it's short or long. So basically I want you to tell me, when you step into Disneyland, because I'm sure you've been to Disneyland, right?
Of course.
What does it feel like knowing that you had a part in that?
Well, there's such a mixed set of emotions a year removed from what was a really long and great career. I will always have so much fondness for the brand, the company, the leadership that was so supportive of me in my career. in a weird way, like there are movies opening in real time that like Aladdin or Lion King or Toy Story 4 can come out and I don't have to worry about how well they're doing or what I might need to tell the press on a Sunday morning about how well they did. Feels awesome. But it's nice. My feeling at this point is it's nice to be able to go back to a place where I'm just a consumer who gets to enjoy the great product without having to worry about whether my work is going to be something that reflects well on the company or gets me, you know, recognized by my boss in a good or bad way. I just like the idea of getting to go back and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So on top of that, I think this question would be fun to ask. Now that you're in the sticks, quote unquote, the sticks, when people ask you who you are and you tell them, I worked with Disney for 17 years, what's their first reaction?
They think it's so cool. I mean, the thing is, like, there are few companies on earth where you'll get this like universal reaction of, wait, what you did? And they, you know, there's usually a string of questions that come after of what it was like or who, you know, did you know this person or did you get to work with this brand or what was it like to work on that movie? And like, of course, I'm a party trick, basically. Yeah. I'm happy to tell any story and every story because I've got a ton of great ones. It's like, you know, as you would expect, working at a company that is as renowned as that, has brands that mean as much as they do, characters that resonate as well as they do, stories that are in people's memories for the balance of their life. You can't have that if you don't also have all the things that you'd hope to have in terms of great teams and great leaders and it being a great place to work. So I've just got so many great stories. And usually when we're all together at Thanksgiving, when I'm walking through the grocery store, when I'm, you know, meeting somebody for the first time, it comes up and it becomes a thing that I get to spin on for a little bit.
That's awesome. So could you now that's going to be my next question that just popped up. Could you share a story with us, your favorite Disney story?
Oh man. I mean, just in terms of like the last job that I had, the sales head, like there will be forever in my memory, like where I was and what was happening the opening weekend of The Force Awakens, because it was after such a long period of time without a movie, the build up, it ended up being the biggest opening weekend at the time of all times. I sat with the, at the time, COO of the Walt Disney Company in the back of the El Capitan Theater that we owned, watching the very first screening with an audience that had literally slept on the sidewalk out in front of the theater on Hollywood Boulevard to make sure that they could have the seats and the experience. And the energy when that logo came up, the Lucasfilm logo comes up, it's one of those moments where I'm like, what life am I living? What the heck is actually going on? We set a lot of different records, but that I think as a memory is going to be the one that kind of sticks out as like a pinch me kind of moment. What do I actually get to do here?
And what can you take away from Disney? What did you learn, I guess you could say, from Disney that you can take away and use as principles for your kids or for your life?
Man. I mean, there's so many things that they do so many things well. Like separate from life or kid principles, I will tell you, like the one thing that they do an unbelievable job at that I try to take and implement in the work that we're doing every day here is their stewardship of brands. Like they are, you know, who they are because of having paid extraordinary attention to what it means to create an identity around a brand and then really conscientiously feed the positives that support that brand so that it just becomes something that you love more and more, that you can consistently depend on more and more. I had one opportunity when I was at Disney to meet Steve Jobs before he died. And we had this conversation in a room where he, you know, he's wearing his classic black turtleneck. It's like everything that you would hope for in a Steve Jobs meeting. But he said, a brand is something that every single time you interact with a consumer, you either have a brand deposit or a brand withdrawal, right? Every time, if you've got a brand, if it's the Disney brand or the Hollis Company brand, every time a consumer interacts with your product, they either have a positive experience that is a deposit for the brand or a negative experience that takes away from the brand. And the thing that I think Disney did and still does really, really well, was think about what attributes are going to positively reinforce the brand or the brands that they have, and develop content that is super high quality so that every time a consumer experiences it, they have a positive experience that deposits in a positive way against what they think of that brand. I'm going to try and do that every single day here with the stuff that we're providing. If it's a live event or a book, a podcast, whatever it might be, how can we try and reinforce what it means as a consumer to interact with either myself or Rachel, with the Rise or Rise Together podcast, buy a ticket to the Rise or Rise business event, whatever, like whatever it is, have those experiences consistently deliver something that exceeds expectations and leaves people feeling like they've had a deposit in their mind for what it means to have had that experience with us.
Absolutely. So now moving into the Hollis Company, what are your guys' goals for the future? Where do you want Hollis Company going?
Well, I mean, our goals are always wrapped around impact. And so it really does come down to how do we create as many tools that can be put into the world so that we can help people either remind themselves of who they've always been or can get themselves from where they are to where they've always wanted to go. And we do that, like I said, with books. Rachel's got a couple of great books out. I mean, she has 7 books, but the most recent couple of books in Girl Wash Your Face and Girl Stop Apologizing have been great, you know, for the business, but really great for the impact. Like the work in the response to the work is the sign that, hey, these are things that are resonating and are tools that are being used by people to think differently about what's available to them and for them in life. We've got conferences. Next week is our next of the Rise conferences, which is a women's 3-day immersion in personal development, personal growth, and is unlike, frankly, any experience that I've ever been witness to. If you're interested, there's a documentary about the experience that's on Amazon called Rachel Hollis Presents Made for More. We've got coaching that takes place on a monthly basis from Rachel, both business coaching and life coaching. We have a line of journals to help you start the day called the Start Today Journal, where it's a focus on gratitude, goal setting, and just being intentional about what it is that you're going to go and chase down for the day. So almost every single thing that we have, whether it's a product or an experience, is a reflection of a request that's come out of the audience. We try to really serve the needs of the community that we have and continue to grow. And what we do in the future is going to be a reflection of the things that they ask for. So as we have this experience next week in Dallas, where 7,800 women are jumping up and down, getting excited about their past, their present, and their future, we're going to get feedback out of that crew, and we'll apply those learnings to making the events that happen in the end of 19 and 2020 even better.
Wow. So my last question for you, and this one I'm most excited to hear about, is how do you want to leave your legacy on this earth for your grandkids, for your great grandkids, to be able to look at you and be like, wow, that was my grandpa or great great grandpa? What type of legacy do you want to leave?
Well, I talked about my one tattoo. I'll talk about my other tattoo. I've got a tattoo that says Ally, which is there on my arm as a reminder to me and my kids and my grandkids for who I hope to show up as in this world, which is an advocate, especially on behalf of those who maybe don't feel like they have as loud a megaphone, as big a stage, as much as many people listening necessarily to the things that they need or the tools that they might need to achieve or do as well in life. And so I'm going to try and spend my every day and the work that we do here having impact that has me showing up as an ally and an advocate to this big community that we're trying to continue to reach and grow and support with the kind of tools, again, that will hopefully help them feel like they can take control of and change their life. So I hope that, you know, I've told the story, but one of the things that I was able to create leverage for in leaving my job was the image of my 60th birthday party. So it was like, I'm 42 at the time. I'm now 44. I'm imagining 18 years in the future, my children are sitting around a table. We are raising a glass and I'm having them go around the table to represent what they are proud of in my now 60 years of being on this planet. And I had to think about if I were to maintain the safe, secure route, my boat docked to the harbor, what they might say as they're raising their glass, and how they'd feel if I was to chase this mission of impact, and what it might mean to them to have seen me in the 18 years from that decision, watched me take chances and in the waves of uncertainty grown for the pursuit of actually helping other people. And the leverage that came from thinking about what it might mean for that latter version of my toasting at my 60th birthday to come true was the final push to say, you know what, I am going to leave this dream job in everyone else's mind to go pursue a dream job of my own and see if we can't change the world one person at a time in this Hollis Company initiative. So we're going for it all here.
Wow. That is beautiful, to be honest. I love that. I really hope you continue to document what you and Rachel are doing. And then when you finally put the boots away and retire, you guys make a film about it.
Done. I'm in. We'll do it.
Well, anyways, thank you, Dave, so much for being on this podcast, being an influence to society, just impacting lives in general. I really, really, really appreciate you coming out and being able to speak on this podcast. Is there any way people can connect with you? Is there any way people can get mentorship from you? Where can they find you? Anything like that?
Right on. Well, everything that we're doing at the Hollis Company lives on our website. It's thehollisco.com. You can check out anything that we've talked about today. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Mr. Dave Hollis on Instagram, Dave Hollis on Facebook. And my wife, Rachel, is rad. She's radder than I am. She's Ms. Rachel Hollis, MS Rachel Hollis on Instagram and Rachel Hollis on Facebook. Follow us. We're doing, I hope, a lot of, we're trying to do a lot of good, and we're putting a lot of content out there, a ton of free content that hopefully will help you think a little bit differently about the way the world can work and what you have to do to think that it is happening for you and not to you. So absolutely. Thank you, Danny, for having me on, man. I totally appreciate it. Thank you for your service. I think it's rad that Danny just got off a 12-hour shift and he's crushing a podcast after crushing serving our country. So I see you and I appreciate you too. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for your support. That means the world. Anyways, guys, we'll see you guys later. Please check out Dave. Please check out the Hollis Company. And please check out his wife, Rachel, as they continue to impact the world. So we'll see you guys later. Thank you, Dave.
You got it.
You were listening to Impact My City. Tune in next week for more knowledge and find ways to fulfill your dream.